Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced on the unceded territory of the Mohawk and Algonquin people in Montreal. I'm your host, Gao. In this episode...
And that's the announcement that they've just declared the demo illegal.
The connection between violence against women, misogyny, and mass murders is inextricably linked.
Our people are living in poverty, and they put us in this position.
But first, here are the headlines.
Our first headline comes from Gunnarji O'Sullivan. In an interview with CGSF, Gunnarji gives a vocal objection to the so-called Assert Your Rights section of the 60 Scoop Settlement application, which aims to compensate those who are adopted out or made permanent wards of the state. CGSF broadcasts from unceded Coast Squalish territories on Burnaby Mountain.
I got a chance to speak at the Chief Summit about the 60 Scoop application process or the opt-out period. I think it was about a year ago, and I asked the band members and chiefs and councils, did they know about this process? Or have they been consulting with those who are adopted and fostered out about treaty negotiations? And if they haven't, how valid did it make that? I've opted out of the 60 Scoop application. I gave 7 reasons, the main reason being that it didn't properly consult me. I never really gave my consent in the making of this document, therefore it doesn't really reflect me. And proof of that is that they can't really tell me how much I'm going to get until they count how many people are actually eligible. And they don't also include non-status and the Métis people. There's that, and then the $75 million that 6 law firms get to enjoy while they're breaking it down to $50,000 per claimant, maybe even $25,000. It does not cover the cost of the loss of culture alone, because I know with all of that, I lost the land.
Thanks to Gunnarji for that headline. Our final headline comes from CJRU, broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and most recently the territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation. On April 23rd, a man mowed down pedestrians on a busy sidewalk in North York, Toronto, killing 10 and injuring 16 others. CJRU spoke to Mohini Dattery from the North York Women's Shelter about the ubiquity of femicide and the internet as the culprit for misogynistic discourse.
The connection between violence against women, misogyny, and mass murders is inextricably linked. OAITH, which is the Ontario Association of Interval and Transitional Houses, collect a femicide list every year. Last year, it was over 30 women who were killed. And then this year, we think it's almost around 20 already. I think we really need to pay attention to the fact that this has existed long before the internet. Men's rights activist groups existed long before the internet. The Montreal massacre happened pre-internet. The violence towards Indigenous women and girls, long before the internet. So I'm really hesitant to blame the internet for misogyny or any way sort of make that link. We are a misogynist society. I think we just have to take ownership of that. However, there's definitely been an escalation. And I think the internet itself has become a more hostile place to women and people of color. And I think that those bounds are maintained through violence. So that angry rhetoric is a form of violence on the internet. And then we see it playing out in spectacular ways. What looks like exceptional violence informs ban attacks and then drawing that back to sort of internet culture. But the fact is, this is very everyday. It's happening all the time. Sometimes we have these moments where it breaks through the surface and everyone starts to pay attention. Above all, I think we need attention and funding from council and the mayor, and also addressing the issues that we have already been calling for. So things around safe, accessible housing, anti-poverty, a city that's becoming this unaffordable for exactly those vulnerable populations that we're talking about that are then targeted by the alt-right.
And that does it for our headlines. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to Groundwire News, broadcasting from coast to coast to coast. I'm gonna step into the space my grandmother saved for me. Women of my tribe are made of stone. Tried to break them, take them from their homes. See them rise from smoke and flame. Names change, but blood remains the same. Welcome back to Groundwire News. Now it's time for our features. CKUT brings us our first headline. May 4th marked an urgent national call to action during a critical moment to halt progress on the Kinder Morgan pipeline. CKUT brings footage from the action in Montreal, which was hosted by LEAP Montreal and Climate Justice in solidarity with Indigenous communities across Turtle Island who stand on the forefront of resistant efforts. Participants were encouraged to bring pots and pans to make noise in show of support.
A show of solidarity with First Nations across Turtle Island. First Nations communities whose input is being ignored, their stewardship of the lands and waters is being taken for granted, and their rights violated. A message from Coast Salish peoples are saying that the Kinder Morgan pipeline cannot and will not pass. Recognizing Indigenous peoples' rights is an issue that we know well here on unceded Kanagahage territory. This is an issue of Indigenous consent. We are listening and we hear you. This is also an issue of migrant justice. Climate change is forcing people out of their homes, changing ecosystems, drying up water supplies. And it isn't wealthy northern countries like Canada that will be the first or most affected. The deportation of Lucy Granados is an issue of climate justice. This is also a race issue. The way that polluting infrastructure is being built around Black and brown communities from Nova Scotia to British Columbia. This pipeline is not only ensuring a climate crisis, but funding the irreversible effects of climate change. The National Observer has revealed that Trudeau secretly accepted the project before consultations with First Nation communities were even conducted.
My name is Morgan McGinn. I've been involved with the student fossil fuel divestment movement on the East Coast, and today I've been collaborating with folks from Climate Justice Montreal to organize a demonstration at Marc Garneau's office. As member of the Liberal cabinet, as the MP for the Minister of Transport, we're here to show him that the national interest is not in building the Kinder Morgan pipeline. On May 9th, Trudeau will be meeting in Texas with people from Kinder Morgan, and so we're trying to put the pressure on the Liberal government and tell Trudeau that before that decision is made, that people, the Canadians, do not want the Kinder Morgan pipeline to be built. Today, there's 8 other actions happening across Canada. There were 4 or 5 yesterday. There's several more on Monday. Over a period of 2 weeks, people from across Canada, not only in BC, are mobilizing to show that we want Indigenous rights to be first, and the Kinder Morgan pipeline will not be built.
My name is Nicholas. I'm a Montreal citizen, also a science student and activist. I'm here because I don't approve of the Kinder Morgan pipeline that the federal government wants to ram through. And we're mostly here because the fight of the Indigenous people who are at the front lines has been invisibilized from the current debate. And this is really important because they are the ones who are at the front lines, they're the ones who have been holding this fight for so long, they're the ones who are going to be going to court soon, and they need to see that across Canada, or so-called Canada, they have our support. And this is what this event is about. It's about understanding the real causes that are behind this pipeline and understanding the rights that are being taken by trying to approve and ram this pipeline through without the consent of the nations along the pipeline's route and at Burnaby.
My name is Isabelle Léritier. I'm a citizen of Montreal and also an environmental activist. And for me, I'm here because I think it's unacceptable that our government is continuing to exploit tar sands that are like the most polluting fossil energy in the world. We definitely do not want and need new pipelines in Canada. I think it's totally unacceptable that this project is going through despite the Indigenous resistance on their non-ceded territories, despite the resistance of the British Columbia government on municipalities, local communities. There's so many people saying no to this project, and our government, Trudeau, is continuing to go through and finding ways to make this project pass despite the opposition here in Quebec. You know, we've been having this huge fight in the past years against Energy East pipeline that we finally stopped this autumn, and we're here because we want to send a clear message that we need to do an energetic transition out of fossil fuels, and we will stand in solidarity with people from BC.
This report was produced for Groundwire by Gal Mahadevan on behalf of CKUT in Montreal. Thanks goes to Doug Miller for the raw audio. CKUT 90.3 FM broadcast from unceded Mohawk territory. Our next feature comes from contributor Michael Welch with radio station CKUW 95.3 FM in Winnipeg, broadcasting from the occupied territory of the Anishinaabe and the homeland of the Métis Nation. Winnipeg's annual May Day March coincided this year with a major public mobilization behind the Winnipeg Jets hockey team at a time when it enjoyed unprecedented success in the NHL playoffs. Though numbers were reduced, over 100 community members still managed to make it out and show their support and solidarity with the working class, both locally and abroad. The Winnipeg Labor Council organizes the annual May Day March in Winnipeg. This year's theme was Stop the Cuts, recognizing that people are entitled to healthcare, education, livelihood, and housing in the face of government spending cutbacks. The event started with speeches at City Hall, followed by a parade route downtown, ending up back at the Old Market Square. CKUW's Michael Welch was present at the Winnipeg March and provides some of the voices he recorded at the event.
So for those of you that don't know me, my name is Basha Sokol. I am a postal worker and I am the current president. Thank you. Thank you. I did not plan that. And I am the current president of the Winnipeg Labor Council. So we...
Healthcare is a major issue. I think everybody has that at the top of their mind. Education is suffering as well. We just read in the news recently that Manitoba ranks last for education. I think that's a real concern, and we should all be concerned, you know, that we're not moving the bar up further on that. If we're looking at a municipal level, challenges there as well, you know, things like contracting out, cutting bus service, raising bus fare, wage freezes at the provincial level, you know, inflation's going up, nobody's getting a raise, and bus fare's going up, parking's going up. So there's not really one issue here, but a theme of, you know, cuts to working class folks and raising their cost of living is a major issue.
We're going to have our brand newly elected candidate for St. Boniface, NDP candidate, Blandine Tona. Everybody give her a warm welcome.
I've been here for 9 years now, and one thing that I found was a lot of opportunities for myself and a lot of things that the people that I care. But what has been happening now is most of the people that I work with or I live with are impacted. All Francophone education, all French that your kids are having in school, the organization, that the service that is creating results are getting the most critical cuts now. So something that should be fundamental for our kids are completely silent. We do not have to endure this. We have to organize in order to start fighting back to gain back our rights. My name is Bani Puno. I'm working in Tim Hortons and also a member of the Workers United Canada Council. A co-worker of mine, a single mom who migrated here to Canada for a better life. She ends up accepting something that is the minimum wage, even though she is a highly educated person in the Philippines. The minimum wage is not enough to sustain the needs of her family. So I just hope that with this kind of community and group, we will stand a chance and like to give chances to migrants like us. Thank you guys very much for this opportunity. Thank you.
Of course, there's a lot of things that are not talked about, you know, here at this march itself. You know, I'm a very, like, I guess I'm underrepresented because I'm the only visible Indigenous and transgender person here right now. Not to dismiss anybody else, but I think that's always a recurring theme that happens, is that Indigenous people are left out or events are not made accessible to Indigenous people. And that's got to change. And I would encourage people to include us in the conversation.
I am one of the organizers for the anti-colonial, anti-capitalist May Day contingent. With this contingent, it's trying to center how, you know, the Haymarket massacre in Chicago and those struggles there against capitalism are directly linked to the struggles that we're facing currently in our neighborhoods. Amid all this, there's the injustices faced by Tina Fontaine and Colton Bushi, And also May 1st is a remembrance day for Errol Green, who passed away on the same day, I believe, 2-3 years ago. And we also are demanding increases in healthcare funding, the reopening of closed ERs, the immediate creation of safe injection sites, free from law enforcement, creation of permanent housing and jobs plan. These are all kind of like linked together. Maybe the broader working class, this is something that's radical to them. We're not forgetting about the people that matter the most in our communities. It might be hard to swallow, but these things do need to be recognized. And in recognizing them, then we can move forward together on however we want to, you know, change society.
There are more Winnipeg events planned throughout the month of May, celebrating the victories and honoring the struggles of workers throughout the years. Details of some of those events can be found at mayworks.org. In continuation of Grand Wire's May Day coverage, CKUT brings another feature from Montreal on unceded Mohawk territory. The IWW, or Industrial Workers of the World in Montreal, held a demo in Park Extension. Workers, migrants, the unemployed, students, tenants, all gathered in solidarity in Park Extension, one of the poorest neighborhoods in so-called Canada, and one facing rapid gentrification. These are excerpts from but a few of the speeches and interviews.
My name is Hikaru. I am part of the Plaza Hutchison Support Committee. So if you look right over here, this is Plaza Hutchison, also known as the Johnny Brown Building. So Plaza Hutchison in Park Extension has for a long time been a community space. It included religious institutions, immigrant centers, community spaces, and small businesses. In the last year has been bought by a condo developer, Ron Basal of BSR Group. In the past year, the tenants who have been there have continued to resist his continued attempts to evict them. He has harassed them, threatened them, and cut off water and electricity to them. He has forced a lot of them to leave. There is one tenant who's continuing to be there, who's continuing to resist, and we are letting them know that we are alongside them and we'll do everything we can to support them. Park Extension is the poorest neighborhood in so-called Canada. It is not a coincidence that this area is so incredibly underserved and at very low income. It's been a historically immigrant, migrant, refugee neighborhood. And we can't lose those links between white supremacy, capitalism, and colonialism. These are real intersections that people live at, and people are fighting and are saying they are not going anywhere, and we are alongside them.
They talk a lot about protest violence, but they never talk about system violence. For instance, climate change these days will put a lot of people in jeopardy. As we said earlier, the current stance of the G7 toward workers is precarization, contract work, and non-unionization. The way they plan to do this, it's in the OECD report and the G20 report also. What they ask for is more flexibility from the workforce. And they explicitly say that unions are a bad thing. It's a war against workers. We have to be clear about that. There's a dwindling numbers of jobs available because of automatization. And they want us to fight against each other, to fight against other workers. And we're here in solidarity because we need to stand everybody together.
My name is Hila. We're here to represent nurses who are tired of working in unsafe conditions that lead to increased patient mortality, increased burnout. We're here as workers. The last few months, what we've really been seeing is a wave of denunciations, nurses speaking up about the working conditions that they're facing that put themselves and their patients at risk. There's a very strong culture of censorship, self-censorship, and silencing among nurses, and that kind of has been ruptured. Nurses are particularly speaking out about issues concerning forced overtime, as well as unsafe nurse-patient ratios that lead to increased risk of mortality. So we're here sort of to represent our community, but also to sort of raise awareness about this being a communal issue, a collective issue, not just about nurses, but about all other healthcare workers and our community members alike, the people that come in as patients.
On the other side of town, protesters gathered in Parc Lafontaine. The demo, organized by CLEC, was almost immediately declared illegal. CKUT's Julia Bougel documented the events, including instances of police brutality.
Yeah.
and that's the announcement that they've just declared the demo illegal.
People have moved back. We're only a block or two away from Parc La Fontaine where the demonstration started. The police are running now, and the protesters are running as well. It's the sound of tear gas going. The police have now formed a line, and they're stationary while the bike cops are going. The protesters are all beside Parc La Fontaine now. The police are running now. They're rushing after the protesters who are starting to disperse throughout the park. So the police have just announced that they're ordering everybody to disperse. We're all feeling the effects of the gas right now. There's now a physical altercation between one of the protesters and police members. He's rushing to get away. A police member has just pushed a young woman. Another young man stumbled over a policeman and his bicycle. On the other side of the pond in Parc La Fontaine, cop car after cop car is riding. And the mounted cops on bikes have started again. They're chasing after individual protesters at this point. There are very few protesters at this point left in Parc La Fontaine. Most people have dispersed and gone home.
Thanks goes to Julia Bougel for that footage. That's it for our feature stories. We'll be right back after this.
Yeah. Before I go in, I got a question. Where would we be without our Patreon?
Dear Mama, you gave me light and you gave me life. You gave me dreams to get me through the night. You told me not to follow Christ, that the creator needs no sacrifice. Thanks for all the good advice. Misdemeanors for the life lessons. If you wanna live, moderation is the essence. And I've never failed, hunger pains, you've always kept me fed. But if this my last supper, man, I'll take seconds. I'm sorry, that's human nature, man. We full of greed, no matter if we full or not. We look for more to eat, and I'm grounded now, Mama. But I refuse to shed my feathers, cause that's not the way you taught me, no.
You just heard The Water by Snotty Nose Res Kids. Now it's time for a community radio report. For this edition's community radio report, Gretchen King covers recent hearings in Gatineau, Quebec, at the Canadian Radio Television and Telecommunications Commission. The public proceedings concern the renewal of licenses for broadcasters who enjoy mandatory carriage on cable and annual public funding in form of subscriber fees. Canal M, Canada's only disability news broadcaster, along with the Aboriginal People's Television Network, asked the CRTC for a fee increase. Groundwire spoke to Canal M about the station's mission and their experience at the CRTC hearing.
So my name is Marc Briton. I am general manager of Canal M, the radio station of Vues et Voix, the only inclusive radio station in France.
Can you tell me what is Canal M and why it was created?
Canal M is a radio station organized by Vues et Voix. Vues et Voix is a kind of non-profitable organization whose mission is to give access to information and culture to all those people who have not access directly to that because of some handicap, blind people, but also all the personnes handicapées.
People who are living with disabilities.
Yeah, with disabilities. In this mission, we are recording audiobooks for people who are unable to read, and we built up 20 years ago a radio station. The first mission was to read newspaper and magazine for those people. And nowadays, it's more a kind of inclusive radio station.
You also have a program on para-news, and so that probably makes you one of the only broadcasters airing a disability-focused news program. Can you tell us about para-news?
Para-news, which is in French, para-actualité. We have a daily one, which is para-news, so para-actualité, in which we give an update on all new laws, new discovery, new technology, on everything related to inabilities. And we have another one which is called Accès Libre, which is more on the universal access. It's a weekly one, which is a 1 hour and a half show on which all organizations, political people and so on, debate on what could go forward for those people.
Now, you enjoy as Canal M, mandatory carriage across the country. What's at stake if you don't receive the 2-cent increase that you're seeking at the CRTC hearings this week?
In fact, that means that we will stay at the same level of production. In fact, we are really happy to be able to produce 25 hours a week. But 25 hours a week is not so much. And if we want to give la parole to all the organizations, we need more time, we need more shows, and that's why we ask for those 2 cents more. If not, we will stay at 25 hours a day and try to gain some other revenues, but it's quite difficult because there is no advertising in this field. It's quite difficult to get sponsorships.
Yes. Well, one of the themes of this hearing has been consumer cost. And the commission is quite concerned about burdening the consumer with additional costs. Yeah. We also heard some of the big for-profit cable companies today saying that Francophones with disabilities shouldn't be treated with parity to Anglophone communities living with disabilities. So it's unfortunate that we're having these kinds of conversations that speak against protecting people's rights to the system. But I wonder if you have comments on the idea of consumers supporting media by and for disability communities. Why is this so important in the broadcasting system that we have today?
Because there is no real other station or media which is giving space for those people. So we are the only one in France with Ami TV, which is more focused on blind people doing TV shows. And regarding the English part of the country with Ami Audio, Ami Audio has twice more, has 4 cents instead of 2. And the other thing is they are broadcast all over Canada. That means that it's not a question of real parity because they earn something like 7 times more money than us. So we want to balance it and to be able to produce the same amount of shows that they are doing. And there is no, Ami Audio has no French channel, so we are the only one French channel to speak about those people, and we work really close with Ami TV, which is the same company, in fact, working in French on TV. It's a kind of, let's say, ethic for us. Since 40 years, Vues et Voix works with like 400 volunteers who come and read books for blind people. Few of them, like I will say 30 of them, works also on the radio station to help. And it's also a way for us to include disabled people to learn how to work on the media, on the radio. And we have this last 2 years, 4 of them who are working on Radio Canada or some other station. To come back to the 2 cents and the priority and the effect on the customers, what we ask is like one, it's not 1%, it's 1,000. It's 0.08% of increase. So I think it will be more as a broadcaster profit consequence than more on the customers. Mm-hmm.
And that's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced on traditional unceded Mohawk territory in Montreal at CKUT 90.3 FM. Music this week was by Snotty Nose Res Kids and Jasmine Nitsana, both from the label Revolutions Per Minute. We thank all our contributors this week and also Gunnar G. O'Sullivan, Michael Welch, Gretchen King, and Ome Selma Rahmatullah. I have been your host, Gao. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.